very influential role in protecting Palestinian interests vis-a-vis Israel. It was party to the formation of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, for example. But the, in my view, the effectiveness of the Arab League vis-a-vis the Palestinian cause began to deteriorate with the Oslo Accords of 1995. These brought about a reconciliation of sorts between the PLO and Israel, in as much as each recognized the other, and set in train a process that was confirmed in 2020 by the Abrahams Accord of a greater rapprochement between the between many members of the Arab League and Israel. In the meantime, the fissures between members of the Arab League have, if anything, grown, again, weakening its effectiveness in its response to the events of October the 7th.
Okay, moving on to the next guest. We have Charles Carlson joining us. He is the co-founder of We Hold These Truths, and he's also the director of an award-winning documentary by the name of Roots of Christian Zionism. Charles Carlson, welcome to the program. This war obviously has shown to the world the true face of Israel's brutality, and many are taking action, aside from coming out on the streets, to boycott Israel, especially countries who are very obviously sympathetic and aligned with the Palestinian cause, and I'm referring to the countries here in West Asia. After all, Israel trades with these countries. But how much of a will is there for these countries to actually boycott Israel?
Well, in the first place, all these questions about why Israel acts the way it does can be boiled down to a very simple formula, and that is, what does the power structure in the U.S. Tell the state of Israel to do? The state of Israel does appear to be the boss of the entire world when it comes to political matters of war. But actually, the pressure groups that are in the U.S. That provide the money to keep the state of Israel going, the truth is, when it stands in the way of objectives of the current U.S. government and of the people who control the U.S. government, they simply put pressure on Arab countries, and this is done economically for the most part, but also in a threatening fashion in some cases.
There have been plenty of conversations on talk shows covering the Israeli carnage in Gaza. One of the positive points have been the disinformation when it comes to the facts about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But there have been moments when the guests at some of these channels puts things into perspective in such a way that it shows the true colors of the Israeli regime. Such was the case in point in this talk show host.
I would do exactly like Israel did, kill as many people as possible since the world is letting me do it. The thing is, the question is, what is a proportionate response? Because
yes,
it has been different from one tier to another. So if you look to this graph, for example, this is the death of Israeli and Palestinians, and it's changing from one year to year. It's like fluctuating like crypto. So my question is today, what is the going rate today for human lives? I mean, 2014 was a great year for Ben Shapiro. 88 Israelis were died, and there was 2,329 Palestinians killed on the other side. That is one Israeli for 27 Palestinians. That is a very good exchange rate. I mean, 2018, 300 Palestinians died. Ah, who's counting, you know? Do you condemn Hamas for the atrocity? Yes, I condemn Hamas. Mm. Hamas is the source of all evil. They're the reason for Israel. And you know what? Let's, for a minute, imagine a world without Hamas.
Right.
What will this world look like? Mm. Let's give this world a name, and let's name this world the West Bank. Hamas has absolutely no control in the West Bank. And since the beginning of this year, only through August, 37 Palestinian kids were killed. Mm. No music festival, no paragliding, no Hamas. Since the occupation of the West Bank, 7,000 Palestinians were killed. No music festival, no paragliding, no Hamas.
It's time now for the InfoNews section of the program. First up, we're going to take a look at the U.S. financial system, and this entry caught our eyes. It's something that is somewhat below the radar, but it's really, really important news. It's called a terrorist economy. That's how it was described, where Washington is prepared to create a new financial disaster for the whole world. That's right, the U.S. Treasury market, that's essential to the functioning of the global financial system, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be working. And we are looking at this in terms of our take, where when you take a look at U.S. Treasury bonds altogether, it was once U.S.'s biggest export. Since 2014, that figure, however, has been negative 4%. So that's a huge figure for that to be in the negative sphere. Foreign central banks, the reason, have stopped buying. Meanwhile, you have U.S. deficits that have continued to grow, whether it's the national or otherwise. And we know the U.S. deficit is obviously a very high figure. Okay? As a matter of fact, we figured this would be best to cover in our next entry, where this covers the U.S. debt. It said the U.S. debt to top $50 trillion, on paper, mind you. The country's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling was exceeded in January, and it was later scrapped altogether until the year 2025. And when we picked that piece of news, this piece of news came out, which we merged into this one news here. Moody's made an announcement and lowered the outlook on U.S. debt to negative. No surprise there. All right, let's go back to the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza. The U.N. made an announcement about the poverty in Palestine, where it's set to soar by more than a third if the war continued for a second month. We're in the second month right now. Obviously, it is going to continue. Who knows for how long? But it put things into perspective by saying nearly 20 years of development progress could be wiped out in the occupied territories as well. Then a look at inflation in Europe. That's always a big newsmaker, but in a different way here. The IMF made this announcement where the Middle East conflict could drive up inflation in Europe. So again, one of the collateral damages of the Israeli war in Gaza, where this conflict has already impacted energy prices. No surprise there, which could drive up inflation in Europe more generally overall. Those were the topics we picked for the InfoNews section.
Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
One of the things that Israel does is that it expands its settlements, which is an act deemed illegal under international law. Now, this way it can claim more Palestinian land, naturally. You would think that it is Israel that is paying for this, but believe it or not, it's the U.S. that is footing this bill to some degree, and it comes from all places, charity from the U.S. That is the focus of our in-depth section for this program. In order to get an idea here, what the U.S. does through its charity comes in this form. And it is the CFI, the Central Fund of Israel, a charity registered in New York, providing financing and investment for illegal settlement buildings in the occupied territories. Now, the money that comes through from the U.S. in this fund gets dispersed. It goes to what's called the Ateret Kohanim. That's an Israeli organization, buys land through reclamation to expand settlements and settler population. Okay? Next, and they say that on their website. Efrat is again, an Israeli entity, company. Agricultural projects to meet the daily needs of the Zionists is what they plan. Then also through Efrat, upgrading roads and security for the settlements for expanded settlement construction. This is how all the money is spent. Next, the Israeli Land Fund, marketing land and real estate exclusively for Jews to create an ideological ownership. Again, the money that comes from the charity is dispersed, and these are the different organizations it goes to. And finally, Regavim, supporting Israeli officials for exercising military powers against Palestinians until all of the land is taken from Palestinians. That's what Regavim does. And this is what happens. Construction activities of illegal settlements from Ateret Kohanim, it goes to this, the expulsion of Palestinians. Then the next one that we talked about, agricultural products to meet the daily needs of the Zionists, it goes for the creation of settlements. Each one of these contributes to the outcome. Next, expanded settlement infrastructure from upgrading roads and security for the settlements. And then for the marketing of land and real estate, you have relocation of immigrants that goes to the settlements. They go to the settlements. And finally, in terms of supporting Israeli officials for their military power exercises, legalization of settlements ultimately happens there. So there you have an idea about how the money from the charity in the U.S., which goes to this fund that I talked about, the CFI, and the way it gets dispersed, these are all the different Israeli companies. In their website, they actually say the things that are outlined here, and then how that funds the illegal settlement construction. Okay? All right, let's find out what our guests think about all this and more. We have Oliver Boyd Barrett, Emeritus Professor at Ohio and California University, who rejoins us. Welcome back to the program, Oliver Barrett. What we want to focus on in terms of the question I want to ask you is the information that people were resorting to when it came to this illegal war that Israel, the genocidal war, was waging on Palestinians. And for example, Generation Z really took to social media and looked at Twitter, now known as X, and also TikTok. How effective do you think that was in terms of educating the masses, and for example, the Generation Z, to get an idea about the conflict and how there's so much disinformation when it comes to Palestinians?
Well, living this is an incredibly important moment that we are living through. From a geopolitical point of view, I think I tend to agree with those who feel that there is no turning back at this point. The credibility of Israel has been gravely damaged. There are very few countries in the global south right now who will feel very enthusiastic about improving their relations with Israel. I think the fostering of stronger relations between the Arab League and the BRICS, and of course there's a lot of overlap between those two categories, and other alliances incorporating the Muslim world, and incorporating countries of the global south, or we can actually now call it the global majority. But I think right now we need to be building an even bigger, greater alliance, building on the outrage throughout the world, including the developed world, or so-called developed world, including the collective West, in other words, and including particularly the Muslim countries of the global south. This is a time for global alliances in opposition to the outrage of Israel's policy of genocide vis-a-vis the Palestinian people.
All right, thank you for that. Let me bring back Charles Carlson into the picture, co-founder of We Hold These Truths. Charles Carlson, welcome back. Our guest talked about the global impact that the genocidal war has had when it comes to the Gaza Strip, but there's more dimensions when it comes to the conflict between Israel and Palestinians. People have taken to social media to have an idea about what's going on because of the biased media narratives through Western media in particular. How much of an impact has that had when it comes to shaping the psyche of the people when they took a look at this war?
Well, the question is, where does the power structure in the United States really come from? What supports this power structure that allows wishes of the State of Israel to precede the better interests of the rest of the world? And the answer to this comes from power structures power groups in the United States that are centered in, but not exclusively part of, the very influential Christian majority. I want to say majority of the voting people, majority of the thinking people in the United States have some affiliation with religion, either through the television or through the tens of thousands of churches that are attended by Americans.
The ongoing boycott is having a significant economic impact on Israel. The war is estimated to cost the regime as much as $51 billion. But that is an optimistic estimate of the cost of war, and boycotting Israel will add more economic pain to the regime. Muslims are abstaining from purchasing Israeli goods in order to convey a message to Israel. Boycott is considered to be part of a wider movement called the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions BDS movement, which was formally launched in 2005 by a coalition of about 170 Palestinian grassroots and civil society groups. Calls to boycott Israel have grown in recent years amid concern about its treatment of Palestinians. The movement targets international companies that they say are engaged in violations of Palestinian human rights, drawing inspiration from the boycotts of South Africa during apartheid. The BDS movement encourages the continued pressure on those who support Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza.
It's time to boycott Starbucks, Disney Plus, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Walmart and Instacart, and many other brands. I am deleting all the apps. I am no longer supporting those brands ever again because they think that what they're doing to Palestinians is okay, and it's not.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matt Yaposyan. When it comes to boycotting Israel, it doesn't only include products. There are different boycotts, from trade to the military, diplomatic ones. All have come into effect in this genocidal war that Israel is waging against the Gaza Strip. One of the starting points can be action from Muslim countries, especially regional ones, and that would involve boycotting trade with Israel. The following shows the respective countries and the amount of trade that they are doing with Israel. Obviously, a stop to this would definitely hurt Israel, especially at this juncture. The other boycott option would be in the arms and military sector. That is one of the biggest sectors in Israel's economy, and a boycott there would negatively impact its economy. Between 2018 and 2022, at least 35 countries imported weapons from Israel, totaling $3.2 billion. It needs to be mentioned that 10 countries have received about half of all U.S. foreign aid since World War II. Israel has received about $264 billion in foreign aid from the U.S. But some of the countries that are receiving this aid are also buying from Israel, so cutting arms sales from Israel would go against their interest. On the diplomatic front, Israel has definitely taken a huge hit from the war it has waged against the defenseless people of Gaza. Worldwide protests, for one, show how its image has been shattered on the world stage. Eight countries have recalled their ambassadors from Israel, as seen here. One country has gone a step further and has severed its ties with Israel, and that was Bolivia. And that does it for this Quick Take section.
Western media has been trying hard to control the narrative on this war, but it has failed to do just that. Media outlets like CNN, BBC, and the likes have tried to portray Israel as being the victim. One well-known CNN reporter at the Rafah border crossing, however, got an earful from an Egyptian reporter who put her in place for the U.S. and its role overall when it comes to Palestinians.
This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our
our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channels, and instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
We ask you to condemn. Where are your condemnations? Where's your channel covering this? Cover this. Say the truth. We understand you're an employee. You're just a puppet. You're just a mouthpiece. I understand you have your foreign policy. No, I've heard you. I understand you represent your government. That being said, you're a country that's claimed free speech, and now we are watching an occupation, and we are watching the result of your silence, of your misrepresentation of Arabs.
That does it for this edition of the program. We're going to continue this theme with the Israeli war on Gaza. Fahmi Kavitagli and the entire team, it's goodbye. On to the next Economic Divide.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Limelight.
According to a report, the United States has secretly increased its military aid to the Israeli regime, sending it more sophisticated missiles and equipment amid the ongoing war in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. American newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has unveiled a resolution to block a $320 million arms sale to Israel, which has been carrying out a genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza since 7th of October. A group of progressive Democrats led by Ilhan Omar introduced a proposal called a resolution of disapproval on Thursday, 16th of November. The resolution seeks to revoke the export license of a specific type of guided bomb kit approved for sale to Israel months before the regime started its war on the besieged Gaza Strip. In a statement, Ilhan Omar's office said these weapons have already been used in the siege of Gaza. The Biden administration and Israel agreed on the arms deal earlier this year. The Wall Street Journal reported back then that the White House informed Congress on 31st of October that it would begin transferring the gear, which can turn an unguided bomb into a GPS-guided munition. Ilhan Omar, one of the loudest voices in Congress against U.S. military support for the Zionist regime, said in a statement that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his far-right cabinet continue to commit war crimes in the besieged Gaza Strip. She said, from requests to minimize civilian casualties, avoid a ground invasion, avoid reoccupation of Gaza, and institute a meaningful humanitarian pause, Benjamin Netanyahu continues to thumb his nose at U.S. policy and U.S. requests. Ilhan Omar said Washington already provides Israel with $3.8 billion of military aid a year and holds enormous leverage over Israeli actions. It is the responsibility of Congress to exercise oversight over weapons sales. Omar added, That is why we must not allow weapons sales that will be used to directly violate US and international law, human rights law, and our own moral standing in the world. American Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a report, the United States has secretly increased its military aid to Israel, including sending more sophisticated missiles and equipment to the Zionist regime amid the ongoing war in Gaza. Bloomberg said in a report published on Wednesday, 15th of November, that the Pentagon had quietly ramped up military aid to Israel by delivering more laser-guided missiles for Apache gunship fleet, as well as bunker-busting munitions, 155mm shells, night vision equipment, and new army vehicles. The report said, for example, as of late October, all 36,000 rounds of 30mm cannon ammunition, 1,800 of the requested M141 bunker-buster munitions, and at least 3,500 night vision devices were delivered to Israel. Citing an internal Defense Department list, Bloomberg said the arms are already being shipped, or the Defense Department is working to make them available from stockpiles in the United States and Europe. The Pentagon has so far declined to comment on the report, but it said in a statement that it was leveraging several avenues, from internal stocks to U.S. industry channels, to ensure that the Israeli regime has the means to continue its aggression against Gaza. The statement said the assistance will be provided on a nearly daily basis and that the United States was rapidly supplying Israel with precision-guided munitions, smaller diameter bombs, 155mm artillery shells, and other munitions in addition to Iron Dome interceptors and medical support equipment. The damning report comes as the Israeli regime continues its savage bombardment of Gaza, with human rights advocates having urged Washington, which annually gives the Tel Aviv regime $3.8 billion in military assistance, to stop providing unequivocal support to the Israeli regime and end its weapons transfers. In a letter on Monday, 13th of November, more than 30 relief organizations wrote to Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin to dissuade him from sending the occupied Palestinian territories the 155mm shells over the extent of their collateral damage. The more than 30 relief organizations said, in Gaza, one of the world's most densely populated places, 155mm artillery shells are inherently indiscriminate. These munitions are unguided and have a high error radius, as they often land 25 meters away from the intended target. Israel waged its brutal war on Gaza on 7th of October after Palestinian resistance groups launched Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the occupying regime. Since the start of the war, the Tel Aviv regime has claimed the lives of tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children, and left tens of thousands of others wounded. The Israeli regime has also imposed a complete siege on the coastal sliver. Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A senior U.S. State Department official involved with transferring arms to key American allies has resigned over President Joe Biden's decision to continue sending weapons and ammunition to the Israeli regime. Josh Paul, who has been the Director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political and Military Affairs for over 11 years, in his resignation letter published recently, said, "Blind support for one side is destructive in the long term to the interests of the people on both sides." Josh Paul wrote, "The Biden administration's response, and much of Congress's as well, is an impulsive reaction built on confirmation bias, political convenience, intellectual bankruptcy, and bureaucratic inertia. That is to say, it is immensely disappointing and entirely unsurprising." In his two-page resignation letter, Josh Ball said the American support of the Israeli regime only leads to more and deeper suffering for Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. Josh Ball added, "I fear we are repeating the same mistakes we have made these past decades, and I decline to be part of it any longer." He added, "We cannot be both against occupation and for occupation. We cannot be both for freedom and against freedom. And we cannot be for a better world whilst contributing to one that is materially worse." He added, "I cannot work in support of a set of major policy decisions, including rushing more arms to one side of the conflict, that I believe to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse." In a recent interview with the Huffington Post, Josh Paul said, "Israel's cutting off of water, food, medical supplies and electricity to Gaza, a territory of over 2 million people, is not acceptable and violates human rights principles." He noted that he had encountered other dilemmas whilst working on military assistance inside the State Department, but that he had always felt he could bend things in the right direction. He said not so this time, which was the biggest reason that he decided to resign. The State Department declined to comment, citing policy on discussing personal matters. Josh Paul's decision came as the Biden administration has been unequivocally batting the Israeli regime during the last month. Even after a horrifying Israeli airstrike campaign on hospitals in Gaza that massacred at least 500 innocent Palestinians, Joe Biden, whilst visiting the occupied Palestinian territories, echoed the Israeli regime's line that the devastation was caused by a misfired Hamas missile. Moreover, in the recent movements, hundreds of protesters, including American Jews, worried about Palestinians in Gaza, recently occupied a building of the U.S. Congress, urging lawmakers at Capitol Hill and Biden administration to push for a ceasefire in Gaza. Also, pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been held across the globe over the past month in opposition to the Israeli regime's brutal war of aggression against Gaza.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the world is watching a genocide unfolding in the Gaza Strip, another massacre is taking place against the Palestinian people in the occupied West Bank. Since the Israeli offensive began on the Gaza Strip on October 7, the violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank has also escalated. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinians there. The Israelis have cut off Palestinian villages and cities from one another by closures and settler attacks. That has resulted in a near standstill of commercial activities of Palestinians and their movements. Furthermore, armed settlers backed by regime troops have blocked entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities through military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates. During the current offensive, the rate of violence practiced by settlers against Palestinians has escalated. That includes preventing them from accessing their lands, attacking them while picking olives, expelling them from their fields, and harassing Palestinians moving on roads.
We used to have problems with the settlers, but after the war in Gaza, they want to kill all of us.
After the war, the situation changed. They started attacking our houses. They didn't used to come to our houses. They started attacking them and the people inside them.
preventing access to water and food needs, especially in the hurting communities, is done by Israel with the aim of displacing the Palestinian communities in those areas.
We have the same occupation and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
Just days ago, Jordan warned against Israel's plans to displace Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank to the Arab Kingdom, saying that Amman would consider the move, quote, a declaration of war. The warning refers to a decades-old plan dating back to before the creation of Israel in 1948. This transfer plan, originally formulated by Zionist militias operating in Palestine and then endorsed by the regime after its creation, calls for mass expulsion of Palestinians to Egypt's Sinai Desert. After Israel's occupation of the West Bank in 1967, the idea of pushing Palestinians towards Jordan became included in the transfer plan.
There's also been a sharp increase in settler violence and takeover of land across the West Bank. Since 7 October, nearly 1,000 Palestinians from at least 15 herding communities have been forced from their homes. In the context of the coercive environment they live in, the displacement of these communities may amount to the forcible transfer of a population, which is a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention.
Before the start of Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the occupied West Bank was already witnessing the deadliest year on record for Palestinians. The worsening violence in the West Bank has fueled concerns that the Palestinian territory could become a third front in a wider war, in addition to the regime's northern separation line, where clashes with Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah have taken place. Over the past 4 weeks, Israeli forces have raided Palestinian territories in the occupied West Bank in a bid to quell a rising resistance against the regime there. The Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank has now turned into a hotbed for resistance against Israel. The Jenin camp, with its high population density, narrow space, and adjacent homes, is very similar to the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Palestinian fighters present a significant challenge to Israel's aim of destroying the military and political capabilities of resistance groups there. Israeli attacks on Jenin and Tulkarm are aimed at ending the resistance in the northern occupied West Bank so that it does not extend to the other cities. The regime has destroyed roads leading to vital institutions and centers that citizens need in their daily lives in those areas. The attacks on the northern West Bank are aimed at ensuring any future arrangements within Israel's vision of expanding settlements. But the October 7th resistance operation against the Israeli regime has proven that the regime cannot protect settlers.
The Israeli occupation policy today is that you need to accept being killed by the Israeli soldiers and the Israeli settlers without speaking. It is a gag order. They don't want the victim to speak up. They don't want the victim to condemn their murder of the victim itself. So that is the policy of the Israeli occupation, colonial, dictator regime.
Israeli forces raid Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, the largest medical complex in the Strip, where thousands have taken shelter. The spokesman for the Ministry of Health in Gaza has said that there are only doctors, patients, and displaced people inside Al-Shifa Hospital. Regime troops entered the hospital's emergency department building while tanks surrounded the medical complex. The Israeli military said it is conducting the operation in a cult specific area. Hamas resistance movement has said that Israel's leaders and the U.S. presidents were fully responsible for the consequences of the regime's raid on Shifa Hospital. Al-Shifa has been denied urgently needed supplies of medicines and fuel. Fuel shortages threaten the function of generators which run vital equipment like ventilators and dialysis machines. The World Health Organization has described the situation of the hospital as dire and perilous. The hospital's last generator has also run out of fuel, which has led to the death of several premature babies and wounded patients.
I am standing here at the ICU at Al-Shifa Medical Complex. This department is suffering after the shutdown of electricity due to lack of fuel. The health ministry warned about the lack of fuel. These people here were denied life support devices. They may lose their lives because there are no support machines or artificial respiration devices. Around 29 patients are facing this tragedy.
Israel alleges that Hamas has built its headquarters in bunkers and tunnels under the Al-Shifa Hospital, a claim rejected by the Palestinian resistance movement and hospital staff. Shifa Hospital has been one of the main targets of Israeli strikes since the regime began its deadly onslaught on Gaza. The situation remains tense in other hospitals as well.
And you are asking doctors and nurses to move people, knowing that that would kill them. And again, why would you need to move them? A hospital should never be under attack. A hospital is a place, a safe haven. This is agreed under international humanitarian law.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli Heritage Minister Eliyahu made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli Heritage Minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abul Qait has said the remarks reveal that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Since October 7th, the Zionist regime's police forces have barred most Palestinians from attending Friday prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, scenes of worshippers being prevented by Israeli regime forces from praying at Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa Mosque, have become commonplace since October 7th. The holiest Muslim site in Palestine usually draws tens of thousands of faithful for prayers every Friday, but seemingly arbitrary restrictions on who can enter the compound mean Protests regularly erupt at the site as worshippers are refused entry. Over the past few weeks, the Zionist regime troops have fired tear gas on Palestinians attempting to pray in the streets surrounding Al-Aqsa and attacked some journalists covering the events. Mohammad Salamiya, an 18-year-old man who has not been able to pray at Al-Aqsa since the beginning of the war, said, "They don't let us in, oppress us and hit us." Jihad Taha 47, who was also barred from going in Friday prayers, said the restrictions are part of a wider campaign against the Palestinian residents of Al-Quds. He said, "The goal is to put pressure on residents of the old city in general and the residents of Al-Quds in general." While young men are more likely than others to be stopped, they have not been the only targets. Basima Zaidan, a 57-year-old woman who walked from Al-Quds neighborhood of Ras al-Amu to reach the mosque, said she was turned back by police officers after waiting for 30 minutes. She said he told her to go back, return to Ras al-Amu. The prayers, which usually see an average of 50,000 worshippers in and around the mosque, only had around 4,000 people recently. Mustafa Abu Suey, a member of the Islamic Waqf Council in Al-Quds, told Middle East Eye, "There are extremely tight restrictions to prevent the worshippers from coming in. There are not letting young people come in, for example, alongside people who are 80 years old sometimes, but it is very dependent on the individual police officer that has the authority." The Islamic Waqf, or Religious Endowment, is a Jordanian-appointed organization in charge of the control and management of Islamic sites in Al-Aqsa's religious compound. They have often spoken out against the Zionist regime's increasing pressure on the mosque and its surrounding area. Many Muslims fear that the Zionist regime will use the tumult of the ongoing war to implement a lasting change to who controls the holy site, which Jews refer to as the Temple Mount. Abu Suey worries the situation may be exploited to implement long-term restrictions on the compound, adding that the Waqf will never accept such circumstances. These restrictions on Muslim prayers in the Old City coincide with growing pressure on the Armenian quarter of Al-Quds. There, the Armenian Christian community claims to be facing an existential threat following a murky and secretive deal that could see some 25% of the quarter sold to the Zionist settler communities. Ever since the start of the current war in Gaza, the Zionist regime has placed heavy restrictions on worshippers wishing to reach the Al-Aqsa compound, setting up many checkpoints and not allowing those who don't live in Al-Quds to enter. Increased violence has also been seen in the West Bank, with the Zionist settler and army attacks killing over 170 Palestinians, and in East Al-Quds, where police forces tightened restrictions on the movement of people. Despite the increasing restrictions at Al-Aqsa, many Palestinians, such as Zaidan, say they will keep trying to access their religious sites. For them, the site is just as much as a symbol of their struggle against the Zionist occupation, as it is a revered spiritual site. Zaidan said, "My soul is for Al-Aqsa. My blood is for Al-Aqsa." According to Anadolu Agency for the consecutive weeks, Israeli regime authorities imposed tight restrictions on Palestinians, banning them from entering Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Al-Quds for Friday prayers, leaving the mosque all but empty. An official with Waqf department in Al-Quds told Anadolu that only around 4,000 Palestinians, most of them elderly, had managed to reach the venerated mosque to perform Friday prayers, down sharply from the usual 50,000. The official, who asked not to be named, added that the mosque appeared to be empty due to strict Israeli regime control of the streets. Eyewitnesses told Anadolu agency that the Zionist regime forces have been heavily deployed across the occupied East Al-Quds, particularly in the Old City and the entrances leading to the mosque. Hundreds of Palestinians were forced to perform Friday prayers in the streets near the Old City after being barred from entering the mosque itself. The Zionist regime site gave no reasons for restricting Muslims' access to Al-Aqsa for prayers. Before the Zionist regime's restrictions, at least 50,000 Palestinians used to perform the Friday prayers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, particularly on the holy day of Friday. Tensions have been high across the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed by the Zionist regime forces in the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sowing discord and conflict among Muslims is the enemy's trick to make Palestine ignored. January 19, 2014. It is in such conditions that the enemy is focusing all its efforts on making the Islamic Ummah forget about Palestine. How do they want to do this? They want to do this by creating discord, waging domestic wars, promoting deviant extremism in the name of Islam, religion, and Islamic Sharia. They want a group of people to say takfiri things against Muslims. The existence of these takfiri orientations, which have emerged in the world of Islam, is good news for arrogance and the enemies of the world of Islam. It is these takfiri orientations that attract the attention of Muslims towards insignificant issues instead of letting them pay attention to the truth about the existence of the malevolent Zionist regime. This is the exact opposite of what Islam wants. Islam has asked Muslims to be strong against the unbelievers, but compassionate amongst each other. The Holy Quran, chapter 48, verse 29.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Muslims should be strong against the enemies of religion. They should stand firm and they should not be influenced by the enemies. Being strong against unbelievers is the clear message of this ayah. Muslims should be compassionate towards one another. They should stay together and join hands, and they should hold fast to the rope which Allah stretches out for them. This is the command of Islam. Now, what happens if an orientation emerges which divides Muslims into believers and unbelievers, which targets a group of people as unbelievers and which pits Muslims against one another? Who can doubt the role of arrogance and the security services of arrogant and malevolent governments in creating, supporting, and enriching these orientations and in equipping them with weapons? These arrogant powers sit and plan for this. The world of Islam should